Hashtag Tim and Sid. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous. Wow. This here is the Tim and Sid Show. You are now tuned in, coast to coast, entertaining the masses. Sports edutainment.
Yeah.
It's about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
On behalf of everyone here at Tim and Sid, McAuliffe, myself, and the whole crew, congratulations to Team E for winning the lottery. Team E.
Team E. Team E. Team E. Team E. Team E. Team E.
Told you.
We should have had a pool of like all the other things that could have happened. You would have taken Team E at 2.5. That's a surefire Tim McAuliffe bet at 2.5. Surefire. This is Tim and Sid. We're live on TV, radio, online. Download the pod 24/7. Busy show coming up on today's edition. Tim, June signifies ALS Awareness Month. The man who has started a movement online, and you have seen it in your timelines by now, Chris Snow, assistant general manager of the Calgary Flames, has been kind enough to join us next hour here on Tim and Sid. We will talk to Chris. Looking forward to that. There's a new quarterback in New England, Tim. I don't know if you heard. Cam Newton is now a thing. Mike Reese of ESPN, who covers the Patriots exclusively, he will join us momentarily. And there
just
are
so
a lot of...
happens that it came at the same time that they were being fined by the NFL for things that they had done in the past. But go ahead. You know, I understand. New quarterback in New England.
What was the penalty
Whatever
on that?
Punishment.
What was the penalty on
never
that?
Never mind the punishment. They got a new quarterback.
No, I'm asking you what the punishment. I'm actually asking you what the punishment was. What was the punishment?
$1.1 million.
Right.
Big time money, and a third round pick.
So if Cam Newton has a good year and leaves as a free agent, do you know what the compensatory draft pick will be for the New England Patriots?
Third round pick
in 2021. They never lose. The Patriots never lose. We'll talk more about that. And the hockey world is buzzing with news and non-news, it feels like. So such has been the case in sports for 4 months. Chris Johnson of Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet will be joining us in the next block here on Tim and Sid. Timmy, how was your weekend, man? Good to see you. How are things?
Things pretty good. Got to work over the weekend. You? What are you doing?
Similar.
What'd you get
weekend.
Up to?
Similar.
Why
weekend.
Are we? Why are we busier from our basements than we were in real life before all this pandemic thing hit?
I'm exhausted. I've never been. I don't have kids, but I've never been this busy. Guys, a tip to everyone: when your dad says, "I got a new barbecue," it won't take that long. It's going to take that long.
Did you do the barbecue put together?
Hold on a second.
Joel
had a barbecue. It's yesterday. It's like 3:30. He's like, come on over. I'm like, okay. In my mind, because I'm not versed on putting things together often. I don't do it often. But I do it so sparingly, I forget how much of a pain in the ass it is. So I show up and I'm like, this won't take a great deal amount of time.
Yeah.
And 2.5 hours later, there was a barbecue.
That's like walking into IKEA and looking at the stuff and going, oh, that looks amazing. And it's only what? Yeah. It's only $500? Let's take it home. Yeah.
If IKEA was Portuguese,
it'd be a grill.
It wasn't that. No, let's not get crazy.
Go ahead. Pièce de résistance. Piece.
My last pièce de résistance, because it's done, and he's going to make some sardines on it this week. What pissed me off the most wasn't the 2.5 hours, wasn't all the time spent. They had a bottle opener that they asked you to screw in, and I put it in upside down. So we went through 2.5 hours,
I
screwed up the bottle opener on the bottom left.
But isn't it just screws?
It's not the end of the world. No, but it's the principle. It's not the end of the world. Because my dad looked at me when it was done and said, "I'll do it tomorrow." I don't need you anymore. I want no part of this. You've screwed up enough, because he knows what he's doing. I got to go by the instructions. I got to go by the steps. That's how I build things. I got to go by the steps, and he's like 8 steps in. He's already putting on the hood. I'm like, we got to hold on. I'm at step 2.
He's a worker. He's a professional worker.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Well, now a retired professional worker, but kind of right. he knows what he's doing. So anyway, so 2.5 hours later, we got my dad a second barb, not as good as the Weber. Shout out the Weber. It's not as good as the Weber. This is specifically for one type of food. The Weber does everything else, but that's okay, my barbecue story from the weekend.
I was going to ask you about the Weber and then ask if I needed to just move on quickly or...
No, the Weber does 95% of his stuff. There's 5% that he needs right,
listen,
in a different way. That's all.
God's honest truth. We have a his and hers in our backyard. We have a his and hers grill in our backyard. My wife uses the gas grill. I use the charcoal grill. That's how it works in my backyard.
It's not a washroom. What do you mean his and her?
Homeboy.
Come on, McAllister.
And I am lucky enough to be in the position where I could get his and hers because of my agreement with the fine folks at Weber.
Hold on, you also work to have that agreement. They didn't just
No, it's an agreement, yeah. No,
you
I got a
nice
little deal.
Working relationship with Weber, yes.
I got a deal with Weber, and they gave me a charcoal grill to go along with my gas grill, and we use them as his and hers. And my wife is a great griller. She does steak. She does souvlaki. She does lots of
I've
things.
I've seen the pictures. I've seen the pictures.
But I do the wings, Sisheru. I do the wings. I do them on charcoal, and I smoke them with a little hickory on top. You know what I'm talking about?
Smoke them if you got them. Absolutely.
Smoke them if you got them.
Are you the first ever his and hers barbecues in the history of time? Are you a pioneer? I have never in my life heard this. I'm not messing with you. I think you have started something here that Weber can take into a whole new line of barbecues. They can do a whole couples barbecues, 50th anniversary wedding barbecues. They can do all kinds of stuff.
They got to start advertising with us again. They get that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying, 6-0?
We are
still awaiting word from the federal government. But by the way, hold on. Before we move on to the federal government and all this stuff that we're about to sort through, and I say stuff, probably wanting to say
almost,
another word for
almost
stuff.
Almost something else, yeah.
Congratulations. That is, when over the weekend, you put together a barbecue with your old man.
Yeah,
other good times.
It's a little thing, man. Well, you had a great time.
Yeah.
And again, and we're being as responsible
how many,
as we could. I was wearing a mask.
How many cigarettes or Superbock do you, none, zero?
Not during. I can't build and drink at the same time, man. Come on.
No, I couldn't either.
You think the
but
bottle
your dad looks like a guy that could.
He offered me, honestly, I show up and I'm thinking to myself, I want to stay sober. I want to get this done. I don't want to mess up any bolts. I don't want to put a leg where it shouldn't be. He offered me 9 beers throughout the entire process. All he wanted to do was get me blottoed as we tried to put together this $2,000 barbecue he bought. And we eventually got there. So it's a little thing. Well, you had a bit of a weekend, no? You're looking like
Paul
Bunyan.
Yeah, but I
don't know how much of this I can say.
I will just say this. Like my 76-year-old Greek neighbor, your dad is a man's man.
Man's man.
No matter what he produced that sits in front of you at this time. Sixero's old man is a man's man. He puts stuff together. You shake his hand. He shakes it like he's going to do damage. If you dare, like I did, because I wanted to shake a man's hand properly, I put my hand on his bicep, tricep area when I shook it, and there was a ripple of a try that screamed, "I've done real work in my life, you soft broadcasting piece of crap that you are, McAuliffe." And my son does the same thing. That's what the tricep screamed at me. So doing that work with your old man would have to be one, besides the fact that you flipped the bottle cap opener
the
wrong way.
I'm not happy with it.
And I'm sure he wasn't happy with it, but the fact that you got through it and all was said and done and the sardines can go on, I would guess that would be a good day. I would guess that.
Sandra at Tim and Sid, in my adult life, I have put together 3 barbecues by myself. Good for you.
No way. That impresses the hell out of me.
Let me mock her because I can't do what she just did. Just give me the mocking moment for a second.
Oh, no.
That's pretty good, Sandra. That's pretty
one
good.
One of the things I asked Weber before doing the deal with Weber was, will you put the barbecues together before
There's no deal. There's no deal for me, McAuliffe.
No
deal.
Deal
breaker. You could offer me 30 free barbecues for me to distribute like a Robin Hood. If you're not putting them together at my house, the one, done.
No deal.
Deal is over. I can't go through with this. Can't go through with this. Good week.
All right, let's get to the stuff of the day, and we're still awaiting word from the federal government, as I mentioned earlier. After reports Sunday suggested that the Jays were preparing to head north to not only play the season at Rogers Center, but begin summer camp there. A reminder, MLB camps are set to begin on Wednesday, and the Jays still don't officially know where the bleep they're going. If they get that final approval from the Feds, I don't care who gives it to them, a bunch of guys named Fred or the Feds. I would prefer the latter. I would prefer the Feds, but whatever. The Jays would reportedly be required to quarantine at the hotel in Rogers Center, but we'd be allowed to go to the field and back to their rooms. Are you okay with this setup?
Look, am I okay with any setup in this pandemic where Canada's doing okay? I got to be honest, Tim, as a human being, probably not. But as a guy who loves sports, never mind working in sports, I love sports. You love sports. As someone who loves sports, I want to see this back in this way. And baseball specifically, because baseball has no plan B. They have no bubble plan. They have nothing else going on. They're the most at-risk league in terms of not completing this idea because they've been disorganized the whole time. So if this gives the Jays a bit of a breather here, I'm fine with it. Overall, am I good with it? No. But that's not, you know, it's not a popular opinion, but I'm just being honest with you. But in terms of the Jays, I hope, listen, again, you and I talked to Mark Shapiro Friday. That guy was done. He was spent. And I just hope there's a conclusion to this very, very soon, and they can start to play baseball. The sports fan in me is fine with it. I have my reservations otherwise.
You're conflicted. I understand that.
Yeah.
I'm conflicted too. And you said the words that might not be the popular opinion. I want to get the popular opinion in a flash. But right now, we're going to hear from Ontario Premier Doug Ford on the topic, coming down in 3, 2, and 1.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been in conversation with Mark Shapiro all weekend, going back and forth. He's just waiting for the letter of support from the federal government. I know all municipal, provincial, and federal health folks, they kind of gave their approval. I know there's a few tweaks here at the province that Dr. Williams wants to work out with them, but we have to wait for the approval from the federal government on the quarantine side of things. And if they can move forward, then practice will start. I believe they're going to be arriving July the 1st and kicking off the practice moving forward.
So there is the Premier of Ontario, Doug Ford. Like you, I'm conflicted. I would like to hear from the top doctors. We did hear from Dr. Bonnie Henry on what she wanted to see, and we'll get to hockey in just a flash. But the Jays also submitted their 58-player pool to Major League Baseball, leaving two spots open to add players down the road, potentially including 2020 first-round pick Austin Martin, if he is indeed signed by that time. Any surprises there? We asked Mark Shapiro about surprises. He brought up that he wanted to get Austin Martin somewhere instead of just sitting around after selecting him in the first round. But again, he's not signed. Any surprises in that mix? Nate Pearson obviously is on that list.
I mean, if you had a pulse, you're probably in it, right? Like whether you're a prospect, whether you're a guy that was going to fight for a 4-5 slot in the rotation, the Austin Martin thing is the most interesting aspect to it, Tim, for me. I think the best thing for him is just to get reps, as Mark said, whether they're in Buffalo or wherever that taxi squad is located. And it'll be interesting to see if the taxi squad is located outside of Canada or whether or not they'd like them to be in Canada. That'll be something we'll find out in the next coming days, hopefully. But no, it wasn't a shock. I'll say this, though. It did make me smile briefly to see a roster of guys and people who had the intention of playing. Like, for a moment, it was a little escape to look at 58 Blue Jays and remember that they were Blue Jays. And that sometime in the future, I don't know when, there might be baseball. So it did make me smile ever so briefly to see that there, and hopefully it happens. Austin Martin, I think, is the lead. after that, I thought it was all pretty predictable.
We're also still waiting on the NHL's decision on hub cities, which was expected by some to be announced either today or tomorrow. We're not getting it today, reportedly, but Toronto also seems to be a favorite here. In fact, we might see both hub cities in Canada right now. If we were laying odds, might have Toronto and Edmonton at the top with Vegas third. I'm not sure if people in Canada care if they come. Maybe even to the contrary, given the fact that Canadians have done so well with COVID-19 in comparison to the United States of America. Would you be comfortable with Major League Baseball coming in and out of your city, regardless of where you live, and it also being a hub city for the NHL? Look, Sid, I'll ask you, but I want to put this to the Timmins citizens as well.
Throw it up. Definitely.
Okay. Toronto seems to be the favorite in both regards, to being the home of the Jays and a hub city. Are you okay with Major League Baseball teams, plural, not just the Jays, because if they play at home, those other teams are coming through Toronto, and also a hub city in the NHL?
The hub city, in theory, Tim, means hurdles have been hopefully cleared test-wise before people arrive wherever the hub city is, whether it's Vegas, Edmonton, or Toronto, wherever. So from an NHL standpoint,
you hope
I feel
that's part
better.
Of it.
Well, the testing's going
it
on
better
now.
Be.
And 6% of NHL players at last check in an update today sent out by the league tested positive. That's not a good number. The NBA had 5% last week, and people were kind of freaking out over that. English Premier League were at 0.4%. So I'm not comfortable where the NHL is right now testing. I'm sure the NHL isn't comfortable. But by the time they get to the hub cities, you would hope, I was going to say a thing, you would hope that that number's been pared down and people have been isolated that need to, and maybe you've tried to control this. Keeping in mind, all these training camps are going to be in separate cities. So who the hell knows what the number's going to be? Now, I am more comfortable with the NHL once the hub city situation is there than with Major League Baseball. I am terrified at the thought of American baseball teams X amount of times over the next 2 months flying to Canada. Terrified. Again, I'm conflicted off the front, Tim. I just want to reiterate that. The sports fan in me says, let's go. When's the fantasy draft? But the other side of me, that thought is terrifying. And I know there's some smart people in Ontario, you heard the premier just a few seconds ago, who are on this. Federal doctors, provincial doctors. They're not going to do anything stupid. I do trust them. But just the general thought makes me more uncomfortable than what the NHL is trying to do. And there's no way I'm alone on that.
Science isn't perfect, but trusting in the doctors has worked out for a few people. Let's move on. And let me just say this. You mentioned the Premier League. They had 6 positives in their first round of testing of 748 tests. And then, if you did the math on the board, 12 more in their last 11,000 or more tests, proving, one, they were better off beginning their restart and have improved in their bubble. Germany had 1,724 tests in their first round and 10 positives. So both those places got it done and seemingly were better in their bubble, but we still don't have the particulars of some of the bubbles and what they'll look like. And that is the concerning part of this for many.
Correct.
And probably
Correct.
What terrifies you when you're talking about something along those lines. And finally, I wanted to get this in here, but at last we left you, Sid and I were praying for the fine fans of the Senators by offering our hopes that slogging through fandom like cheering for Gene's team is would get you something. But alas, our prayers were not answered. In fact, it was a tough night for Sens fans. On Friday, draft lottery. Ottawa drew picks number 3 and 5. We still don't know who will be picking first overall, but we do know they are not only Team E, Sid Sixero, but they will be one of the 8 losers during the play-in round. Was that good or bad for the league?
It was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in the National Hockey League. I have never seen, and that includes glowing puck, That includes bad All-Star game ideas. That, you name it. It is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. You know what? I keep hearing, all right, if you rid yourself of the draft lottery, and I'll include the NBA into this, Timmy, why the hell not? If you say goodbye to it, guess what's going to happen?
Teams will tank.
They're doing it now! They're tanking now! What do you think is going on in the NBA? What do you think is going on in the National Hockey League? They're tanking in your face! Your argument is about something that has continued for years in both hockey and basketball. So why are we doing this? To award the Penguins Alexis Lafreniere? What are we doing? I am not here screaming for Eugene Melnyk. I could give a rat's ass. And that 3-5, they're going to be okay. They're going to live. Two top five picks. First time in 20 years. The Sens will be fine. The draft lottery died Friday. And we need to put it out to pasture and move on. And just say, you know what? When you suck the most, maybe you get Alexis Lafreniere. How about that? Because what the hell this is a joke. That was bad TV. It was a bad premise. It was awful from the get-go. And it was embarrassing. It was embarrassing. The winner of it was quarantined for another 2 months. You had no idea what the hell happened. Aside from that, I liked it. That was a good broadcast. Put it on the barbecue, Timmy.
Congratulations on your recency bias and forgetting what teams actually tanking looks like. And by the way, while talking about the 2.5%, maybe I should have done the math for you on Friday when I was saying what will piss people off the most, the Oilers, Leafs, or Pens winning this draft lottery, because here's the math. And again, maybe I should have stressed this a little bit more on Friday so we didn't have to go through what we just went through. The Wings had an 18.5% chance of winning the first overall pick. The bottom eight, or the eight playoff losers, had 24.5% chance combined of getting the pick. To me, that's on the league. That's on the competition committee. That was all out there before this transpired. And when you knew that those teams were going to be included in this draft, you had to look at the numbers and say, one of them may win. In fact, the numbers tell you that one of them will win. And guess what? One of them won. And here we are. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. But I don't know of the draft system that works at this point. But I do like when you get passionate and yell at people.
The Leafs are getting that pick. You and I both know, Tim, the Leafs are getting that pick.
I think Montreal is getting that pick.
Well, I love this game.
And Alexis Lafreniere.
I love this game. I'd rather see him in Montreal. I'm fine with that. That's a hell of a story. I'm fine with that.
What do you think the people in Ottawa will think when Lafreniere goes to Montreal?
There's going to be some interesting road games. Very interesting road games.
I got a ding. It says, let's break here.
Break something. Oh, break. Like go to break.
Mm-hmm.
That works.
All right. When we come back, Chris Johnson will weigh in on whether or not the draft system is broken. And oh, yeah. Hey, are we going to have an NHL season this year? That's next. That's right here on Tim and Sid, Sportsnet Radio and TV. Still to come on this edition of Tim and Sid, Cam Newton to the Pats. Does it change the outlook in the AFC East? And should Buffalo be worried? That plus the inspirational story of Flames assistant GM Chris Snow, who celebrated his you've got 1 year to live with what looked like about a 50-yard field goal, but I think it was measured off at 43 yards. So we'll go through that with Chris Snow, assistant GM of the Calgary Flames, who is inspiring a bunch of different people. He'll join us at the top of the hour.
Chris coming up later on, and Chris joining us now. Chris Johnson of Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet. CJ, how are things, man? How you doing?
I'm well, and I've been keeping it snowy strong for Chris Snow, so happy to hear you guys will have him on.
Here. All right, CJ, I just want to get this one out of the way, and then we'll talk about a lot of other things. was I wrong to laugh for five straight minutes at the result of the draft lottery Friday? Was that mean of me? I wasn't laughing at anyone specifically, just the general outcome of it.
No, you were correct. I mean, you were fully justified in laughing at that. I mean, look at it this way. The draft lottery odds didn't change from the previous years. I mean, what you had is, instead of you had actual teams at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, those were replaced by placeholder teams. And never previously in the draft lottery had a team come from that far down to win number one. So, you know, you weren't wrong to laugh. It was a low odds outcome, but, you know, anything that's called a lottery suggests that strange things can happen. And, you know, we're going to get a strange number one overall pick potentially here in the NHL.
What's the best and worst outcome of that Team E? Like, if it's
like from
the
a story
Oilers,
standpoint, McAuliffe? Like from a story
yeah,
standpoint?
Story standpoint, yeah. What's the best and worst outcome of who Team E ends up being?
The best for me is the Canadians. You know, I do think that they're a team that really wouldn't be in the playoffs, obviously, unless everything that happened in 2020 has happened. You know, they sold off guys at the deadline. They have 14 picks in this draft. They're rebuilding, although not with a complete teardown. And given that you're talking about a potential French-Canadian star, I mean, I think that I'd love to see them get that number one overall pick. You know, the worst probably is Edmonton, and not to pick on the Oilers, but just given the sheer number of number one picks they've had in the last decade, I think that's probably the one that will make the internet burn down quickest or with the most fervor. Maybe that or the Leafs, just because you either love the Leafs or you love to hate the Leafs. So, you know, I hope the Habs get them. And I'd love to see Alexis Lafreniere keep playing in Canada. So, you know, that's my number one. But the other, if he goes to Western Canada, there'll be some unhappy folks out there.
Chris Johnson, NHL on Sportsnet.
Awesome.
Hockey Night in Canada, joining us here on Tim and Sid. Both Sid and I were rushing to say that
so
because
excited.
We love you
we're
so much.
Both so excited. Both yes. So excited to talk to you.
What's harder to pull off right now, CJ? Hub City or return to play CBA?
It appears to be Hub City, quite honestly. And
really?
You know, I think the one thing with the CBA, to address that quickly, that's different from normal is that usually in a CBA negotiation, it's a little bit more me versus you. And as we've seen in this sports history, you know, the owners and players often have a difficult time navigating that circumstance and getting something done, at least without missing games and a considerable amount of time. You know, what the conditions of COVID have done is I think that they've required both sides to recognize pretty quickly that they had to find some solutions to making the money work moving forward, because the money has changed a lot, you know, basically overnight from March 12th to March 13th and then onwards, where, you know, the league has failed to generate any revenue. So, you know, I would never call it easy, because I think it's an involved process. I do think what they come up with this week won't be a completely finished CBA. You know, it's probably more of a framework and the main points will be agreed upon that the players will vote on. But, you know, under the gun right now, as they are with the hub cities, I mean, that's been a little trickier. And, you know, obviously everyone has different priorities when it comes to that. You know, safety is number one, but, you know, what that looks like, obviously different players, whether, you know, have preferences individually where they want to go. And, you know, had we been having this talk a week ago at this time, I would have told you pretty strongly that I thought Vancouver and Vegas were going to be the two places, you know, that ended up hosting the games. Vancouver since been ruled out, and I do think it's not entirely a foregone conclusion that Vegas will get one of the other two spots, and that's just in the span of a week that's changed. So, you know, it's been challenging. I know there's still talks going even later tonight between the league and the Players Association on that hub city, because they do have to decide, I would think, in the next day or two at the absolute most. But, you know, it's been a tricky thing for them to pin down, I think, especially with how fluid the situation is and the number of cases in the U.S. It's sort of changed the outlook on what everyone was thinking about, you know, the best two places to hold these games.
Chris Johnson of Sportsnet here on Tim and Sid. CJ, obviously these are highly, highly complicated discussions that the league's having with the provinces and the countries involved. But the longer they wait, is there a musical chairs feel here in terms of fear that the longer they go here, you see Vancouver out, you don't know what's going to happen in the States tomorrow. You just mentioned Vegas might be out. Who knows? does the NHL feel a need to kind of lock this down ASAP just because you don't know what the next 48, 72 hours are going to look like on either side of the border?
Yeah, and I think they're feeling the pressure to sort of get this season completed in a certain window. And you know, that window is essentially August, September, and the first part of October. And there's really not that much longer that can be waited just to have those cities get ready. I mean, you know, I think that the teams that were involved in the bidding process for the hub cities were told they'd get about a month from when they knew they were definitely hosting to when they had to pull it off. And we're in that window right now, basically. We're a month from, if things went ahead as planned or as hoped, you know, by this time next month, you know, we would have already seen teams travel to their hub cities, probably play an exhibition game, and I think we'd be looking at a season that started on or about August 1st. So, you know, time is of the essence. You know, there's also, you know, some pressure here, I think, to finalize all the protocols, all the CBA framework, and the hub cities, and get, you know, something in front of the players to vote on, because we expect it'll be a full NHLPA membership vote that has to ratify this thing and allow it to move towards the next step. But, you know, they want to have training camps open roughly 2 weeks from now, and you can't do that until all this has been decided and voted upon. So I think, you know, there's all those various pressures, some way more distant, like trying to get a Stanley Cup handed out in October, and then others a little bit more imminent, that if you're actually going to move on and have training camps starting in about 2 weeks, I mean, the players obviously have to see exactly what the return to play looks like, what's been agreed upon, and ultimately have a vote. And I think they'd like to get that process at least started this week.
CJ, I got a two-parter for you here. I said that earlier in the show that I thought that if you were laying odds, or if I were laying odds on who the hub cities would be, I would tend to think that Toronto and Edmonton might be the two favorites, with Vegas being third. One, do you agree with those numbers or those odds? And two, do you think that the Jays' ability to return to Toronto could affect the hub city bid of the city of Toronto, because of having both of those leagues in the same city might increase whatever worries that you might have as a city that hosts?
Well, I'll take the second one first. You know, I think the Jays are a bit late to the party here. You know, part of that necessitated by the way things have happened in Florida. You know, their original plan was to do their, you know, play their games at their stadium in Dunedin, where they do spring training. And the outbreak there has prevented that from happening. But I think the NHL is far more in here. There's been a lot of work. You know, Toronto submitted a bid. It did a pretty significant change in the way that bid would work in terms of, you know, moving the sort of bubble, so to speak, over to the CNE grounds and trying to create a scenario in the middle of, you know, the largest city in the country, where they could at least keep everyone in a small zone where they can control who comes and goes quite tightly. You know, I'm with you. I think that Toronto deserves the number one spot on your power rankings as of this moment. In terms of, you know, places that are likely to end up with a hub, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I do think that they've got a bid now that the city, that the provincial government are both comfortable with, and that ultimately the NHL feels good about. You know, I don't know where that leaves the Jays. I have to say, just literally speaking only as a taxpayer and citizen of Toronto, you know, I do have some concerns about the fact that baseball is planning to have, you know, their athletes and their teams traveling around from city to city to play these games. I think that's just inherently more dangerous than what is being proposed by both the NBA and the NHL, where obviously it's difficult to get to the point where we're at now from there till when you get everyone in a bubble. But, you know, I think once the bubble environment is up and running, is relatively safe operation, I think the odds of an outbreak are reduced greatly. And I think the odds of the general population being infected aren't that high. You know, I have some concerns with the fact that the Yankees are going to fly into Toronto and play a couple games here, and then the Red Sox are going to do the same, and
the Rays
moving around, even
Florida,
the Rays
team, I mean, coming in,
the damn Rays, which, you know, the Jays can never beat the Rays for whatever reason. I also don't like that fact, but anyway, I don't have a lot of specific knowledge on what they're thinking there, but I kind of hope that they don't allow this plan to go forward. Honestly, I hope that the Jays maybe have to play their game somewhere else, but I think the NHL is pretty solidified. I mean, we're talking, if things go well, and this has been such a fluid process, and I don't want to be pinned down too much, but I could see Toronto being announced as a hub city officially as soon as tomorrow. I mean, I think that's within the realm of possibility anyway. And so, you know, I think that the NHL has had far longer and more detailed, you know, discussions with all levels of government. I think MLSE's played a big role in getting the city to where it's now looking like one of the ones that's probably going to host some of these games. And so the Jays are coming around late looking for a last minute. You know, it's like me back in university trying to finish my assignment late here. I don't know if it's all going to work out for them. And if the fact you already have a lot of other athletes coming in is going to get in their way, but, you know, it's a tricky thing. And I do think ultimately to answer your first question that, you know, it probably makes the most sense as of right now to look at two Canadian cities. And, you know, I can't tell you for sure that that's the way this thing is going to go, but, you know, just given how different the scene is here in Canada and in terms of the spread of COVID and what we're seeing in the U.S. and really just an alarming spike the last, you know, week or 10 days in you know, a lot of the South, Florida, Texas, Arizona, even Nevada. You know, I just think that the situation is much more stable here and that, you know, it probably makes the most sense. I mean, it's musical chairs right now and we're running out of spots. I mean, the only places we know for sure that the league is considering still is Toronto, Edmonton, Vegas, Chicago, and L.A. I think that L.A. will have a lot of the same problems as Vegas might in terms of spread. You know, I'm not sure what kind of situation Chicago is dealing with, but you're kind of down to just a couple spots and only a few places that appear to make sense. And so, you know, I think your power rankings are sound. Although, as I mentioned, if we had done this a week ago, I wouldn't have had either of those in my top two or maybe even three. So things could still yet change again.
And CJ, before we let you go, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, just for anyone wanting to tweet in and complain about the hockey writer saying that baseball shouldn't be coming back to Toronto. CJ is a diehard baseball fan. He loves the Jays. He loves the sport. There's nothing like that going on here. He is echoing things that we talked about in the opening block of the show. Real concerns over teams traveling from all over the United States on a consistent basis, past Canadian customs, into Canadian airspace, on Canadian soil, with this thing going on. So just in case anyone was even remotely thinking about criticizing a guy we love in CJ, zip it, because he's a baseball fan.
And I'll take that criticism, because you're right. I'm not trying to pick on the Jays here. I mean, but it's the thing is the plan that baseball's had all along just seems less sound to me. And they had so much issue with their own CBA situation, all those discussions, and now they're doing this. I mean, let's even remove Toronto from the conversation. I would have concern about this plan just involving the NL East for fun, where there isn't a Canadian team based. I mean, the idea that you're traveling around New York, Atlanta, and you're Philly and all that, I just think that it's not likely to end well, put it that way. And I think that there's a little bit more backing up from medical experts that what the NHL and the NBA are endeavoring to do, you know, can be pulled off under the current conditions relatively safely compared to jumping all over the continent every couple of days.
Chris, great stuff, man. It's always a pleasure talking to you. Take care.
Love you guys. Take care.
There is Chris Johnson, NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. We asked the question, are you okay with MLB teams coming to play in Canada as well as NHL hub city cities? Yes, 58% at Tim and Sid on Twitter with over 1,900 votes right now. I'm not sure if the phrasing would change the idea. Are you okay with both coming to your city? Would that change the vote?
Maybe a little, Tim, but I think that number, I'm surprised by that.
I'm surprised by it too.
We're
polling sports fans.
Yeah, and Tim and Sid family. Like, we're polling a lot of people that kind of know us a little bit and kind of know what lane we're in. But I am that is an interesting number to me, Tim. That's very surprising.
All right, we'll go over it next, along with if Cam Newton has changed the balance of power in New England or he's just a third stringer getting paid the NFL minimum. We'll discuss that next right here on Tim and Sid, Sportsnet Radio and Television. This is Tim and Sid, live coast to coast to coast on Sportsnet Radio and Television. Still to come this edition, we'll talk Cam Newton with a guy who covers the New England Patriots for a living. And assistant GM of the Calgary Flames, Chris Snow, is dropping by. One of the more inspirational stories of the last year will join us to discuss his battle with ALS. But before the break, we asked the Twitter question that right now is surprising most of the people on our team. And the question is, are you okay with MLB teams coming to play in Canada as well as NHL hub cities? And the yes have it at 57.6%, well over 2,100 votes. Now, we understand that we are polling sports fans. If they're following at Tim and Sid on Twitter, they are probably either fans of wonderful hair product on one of us or sports fans, one of the two. So we understand that, you know, that these will be skewed a little bit from the general population. Here are some of the responses that we're getting. Colin writes in and says, hub city is fine. Having teams come in and out of the country constantly is unnecessary. Jothi writes in and says, only if the MLB teams stay in the Skydome Hotel and don't interact with the public. For now, that seems to be the plan. Charter in, bus to hotel, on premises, into building, out of building, not really allowed. However, you know, the first time someone breaks quarantine, it'll be an absolutely massive story, including, by the way, Jays, if you're watching this, any one of your players. And let it be known, there'll be a lot of people walking in and around that area because they have nowhere else to go right now. So as soon as that player or players break quarantine, it'll be a massive story in the city of Toronto.
Well, the biggest shock for me in terms of that 58% number on the poll, I mean, you said an interesting word there, plan. We still don't know what the plan is for the Jays in Toronto. We're not aware. MLB have left up quarantining plans to the teams. Now, in theory, I understand why that 58% is there, because people know the Marriott is right there at Rogers Center. You technically could be in that hotel for weeks and not breathe fresh Southern Ontario air if you're a baseball player. You can go from the hotel down to the batting cage, do anything you want. But in terms of a plan, we still don't know anything
from what
about
I'm hearing,
what this would entail with the province, with the feds, with anybody.
From what I'm hearing, that is the plan. From my sources, the plan is Skydome Hotel from a chartered plane, and you leave from Skydome Hotel back to your chartered plane.
Cannot leave that area whatsoever. Because that makes sense. That makes complete sense. But
that'll be nowadays,
who knows what makes sense, right?
That'll be up to the semantics of how they draw that up. But from what I understand right now, from what I'm hearing right now, mm-hmm. that's the plan. And that's the plan for the Jays as well. And let's be honest here. Quarantining for 14 days with your family when you return home to Canada, 3, 4, 5, 6 of you, is different than 100 players and staff, right? Like, we all understand
correct.
That.
Correct.
Jim writes in and says, two standards, one for sports teams, different from me. I have to self-quarantine. I call shenanigans. I'll say this, Jim. There'll be different standards for the sports team. They'll also be tested way more than I'm guessing you're getting tested, and they'll be tested before they get on charters. After they get on charters, there will be a plan in place where they will have more resources at their disposal than you will. So to call shenanigans on it, I think you haven't read enough about what's going on.
But there are people that have had to deal, like, and I'm not telling you something you don't know, Tim, the other realities of what this pandemic has done for people, like with parents in long-term care homes and this and that. Some people's mentality on this will not change, regardless of any facts about testing. You are going to get that opinion, and I think you're very aware of that.
And I understand
from
it.
From certain people, yeah. You're definitely going to get that opinion.
If you think it's two different standards, it will be, and it will be for a multitude of different reasons.
Not it won't just be for sports, the different
play.
Standards
yeah.
going forward. It won't just be for sports going forward. Get ready
That's
for it.
That's a great point, too. Will Cam Newton change the balance of power in the AFC East?
Good
Can
question.
He even succeed in New England?
All that plus assistant general manager of the Calgary Flames, Chris Snow. A great story. And we'll do that story next, right here on Tim and Sid.
It's time for real sports talk with Tim McCallum and Sid Sexero.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs. Want to welcome those who have been watching all along. Full 2 hours on Sportsnet 360. Listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome those watching on Sportsnet East, Ontario, West, and Pacific. If you missed the first hour, we were talking about NHL hub cities and a return to play CBA with Chris Johnson. You can check that out wherever you find your podcasts. In this second hour, we will talk about Cam Newton going to the New England Patriots on the same weekend that the New England Patriots were fined by the National Football League for filming the sidelines of the Cincinnati Bengals. Coincidence? We will discuss. Also coming by, assistant GM of the Calgary Flames, Chris Snow. If you don't know his story, we will tell you all about it and speak to the man within 5 minutes. But the story seemingly grabbing our Twitter account right now, Sid, is a poll that we put up asking people if they were okay with MLB teams coming to play in Canada as well as NHL hub city or cities, as it seems like Toronto and Edmonton are now becoming the favorites for NHL's return to play hub cities. Right now, 57% of folks saying yes, they're okay with it. We are over 2,500 votes. And again, we are polling an electorate of sports fans.
The it's a fascinating number, and I'm also confused by the number in terms of what economically is about to happen here in these NHL hub cities. Because let's be honest, there's a couple of industries that will really benefit from this.
I'm glad
we're talking, and with baseball too. We're talking hotels, we're talking catering services, we're talking
hospitality,
hospitality service, like. It's, don't get me wrong, that can employ a lot of people, and you're going to have a lot of teams. And those hospitality services in Orlando, when the NBA gets going, and Major League Soccer, when they get going, they're going to be busy. Certain people will make money and kind of get back on their feet a little bit. But broadly, this is not some, which is why I never understood Alberta's zest for it. There wasn't going to be this massive injection because of the restrictions in terms of other types of businesses. I just never understood it.
Yeah.
So Tim, it's isolated. It's so, I don't get why sports fans are that excited. Maybe this is just the cynic in me. I'm 43. But I don't understand the excitement of, yeah, it's in our city. Okay, why are you saying yeah? Like, what is the why? Just help me out with the why. I just don't understand that.
Well, we
you're not supposed to understand it, but.
We can ask the why. Why are you excited?
Yeah,
I'm okay with that. We'll ask it, and we'll have that conversation later. So we've got all that on the table. But as I mentioned earlier, one of the more inspirational stories of the last year, Sid Sexero, is the assistant general manager of the Calgary Flames, Chris Snow, and his battle with ALS.
He was diagnosed in December of last year. Chris Snow has since become an absolutely inspirational figure. It is ALS Awareness Month in June, and a trick shot for Snowy has taken off, quite frankly, the hashtag of the summer, in a summer where we needed a little bit of good news. It provided us some smiles. Chris Snow, assistant GM of the Calgary Flames, has been kind enough to join us live right here on Tim and Sid on television, radio, online, and on podcast. Chris, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on today.
Hey, thank you. It's tremendous to be here, and I'm standing in a spot where my son sank his trick shot from my bedroom window, because as all of us who are quarantined know, we've got to find one place to hide, and that's my spot.
Chris, let's, before we dive into how much good this is doing, how much this is doing for awareness and fundraising, I think we also have to give time to talk about who, in your opinion, had the worst trick shot. Let's let that breathe. Not all the trick shots were good, Chris. Which one did you look at and say, you know what, could have been better?
Well, you know, the one that wasn't put on Twitter, and I had a buddy, and he wanted to do that run up to a golf ball, and take that swing while you're moving. And he had three takes, and he missed by about a foot on each one. And the comments that his buddies were making, straight face, not trying to be funny, like, you've got this. Oh, no. And they did that three or four times, and the three of us on the string were dying. The guy said, I got to take this again. We're like, no, you've got to go with that. And we're still waiting. I'm not sure we'll all see it.
Full disclosure, Chris, I may or may not have a video of one of an exact same thing that you're talking about. I'll post it after the show just to show my, yeah. I went straight into the water.
Honestly, I think if we could do an outtakes period after all the trick shots are done, the entertainment value would be through the roof.
You'd have a Netflix docu-series worth of material.
Yeah,
this would make Lion King look like a one-episode show. Like, I'm sure it's out there. Chris Snow, assistant GM of the Flames, joining us. Chris, I know you've been asked this a lot, so forgive me, but your reaction, not just to trick shot for Snowy, but just from the hockey community and the sporting community after it's kind of spread and people have heard your story. Yeah. Your reaction to how people have reacted to the news that you and your family were given, what goes through your head?
You always know that people are going to react, I think, with some sympathy, and they're going to show you the best side of them. But what I think we've realized and what's been reaffirmed to us is that the sporting community really rallies around itself, and it's very small. I started out as a baseball writer back in 2000 and a hockey writer back in 2003, and then a baseball writer after that, and have been in the hockey business now for about 14 years. And the way that all those people have come back to me and supported me and my family and people in the city of Calgary who were not from here. I grew up in Boston. She grew up in the Midwest of the U.S., and we could not possibly feel more at home in this league and in this city than we do right now. And my wife has said she will live in this country and in this city for the rest of her life. And I joked with Tree, our GM, so that's a bad negotiating tactic right there. But she means it because she feels so loved and supported in this community. And to know that and to watch, you know, her go through this with me and our kids go through this and know how good they feel about the people around them, both near and far, has been, it's been very comforting at the beginning and end of every single day.
Chris Snow joining us here, hashtag Snowy Strong. And obviously, and I don't want to belittle the work ethic and the inner drive that you have, because I think that this is a lot of people will go in and out and notice how well you're doing and sometimes forget about how much work you're putting into this. But do you think that you've received strength from people cheering for you in this journey?
Without question. I think the word I've used recently is it feels a lot more worthwhile to go through this, knowing that I'm fundraising, knowing that we got to get a letter like we did yesterday from a woman or a man, I forget which, but someone in Edmonton who had lost his or her father. I don't know whether it was a him or her because Kelsey read it to me, but had lost his or her parents a week ago to ALS. And they had been reading the blog that she's written and following our story, and it gave them strength as they were going through this with their family. And we've gotten so many letters to that effect that this has given people who are diagnosed hope that there's a clinical trial that may be coming that might help them. And to think that this is bigger than myself, both in the way of giving people better feeling on a given day, some hope, some comfort, and the knowledge that we might fundraise and help fund an additional trial or two or 10 that could lead to something like what I am in for somebody else and help lead to a cure. It makes this, again, it makes it feel worthwhile. And as I often say to my wife, I really want to beat this. And if I can't beat it, I want to live a very long time with it. And as long as I can do one of those two things, I would much rather do this than not, because that can sound crazy. But you don't get a lot of opportunities in your life to do something a lot bigger than you and something that's actually for the good, the big time good. And I think this is that thing for me.
Chris Snow, assistant GM of the Calgary Flames. and one of the inspirational figures in sports, period, right now, joining us here on Tim and Sid. We're lucky to have him today. Chris, how, again, you were diagnosed with ALS in December of last year. 3 months later, there's a pain.
Actually, in June of last year.
June. Forgive me. Yeah. Please correct me any chance you get. I'm an idiot that way. Yes, please correct me. So June of last year, a little over a year later, there's also there's a pandemic.
Right.
What did the diagnosis do to you mentally when this rolled around?
Mentally, it didn't do a great deal. I was fortunate to know that I could work from home, and I was fortunate enough to know, going back to my diagnosis, that Ken King at that time and John Bean and Brad Treleving were plenty good with me doing the work I had to do from anywhere. So while I don't think I've worked less, I certainly have worked more creatively at times in order to make sure that my family, you know, was with me more often. But I think when the pandemic started, the only concern was whether I could get to Toronto, where I went until my last visit there in late March, and then I began going in Calgary for my treatment, whether I could go there. So there was some anxiety with getting on the plane, going to the hotel. I guess the anxiety was lessened by there being 12 people staying in the 567 hotel, Delta Hotel downtown. I walked to check in and the key wasn't working, and I went to show an ID and they said, "Oh no, sir, we know who you are." And it was not a fame. It was out of a lack of the other 11 having any issues.
They knew everyone by name. They knew everyone by name.
They did. So then the people here in Calgary started to really advocate to the drug maker to get me to go here. And they made that happen in less than a month. And by May 1st, I was going in Calgary. So I've been just very careful. I don't go out of the house very much. I've been fortunate that I can work from home. And I think that, you know, the pandemic has given me, on the positive side, just a lot more family time than I would have otherwise had.
Yeah, that's true for a lot of us. So it's supposed to be a year to live. And then, you know, you celebrate by kicking a 43-yard field goal, which I'm still shaking my head. Please just tell me that you were a high school kicker.
I didn't kick at all. I played some soccer. I played some golf. I spent way more time on the school newspaper than I did on either of those things. But when I was in college, I lived across the road from the practice field at Syracuse University where the football team played. And a buddy of mine who was a really good high school kicker would meet me. We jumped that fence because they kept the lights on at night. And we would play horse like you would with a basketball, but we would kick field goals. So we'd say, okay, left hash, 37 yards, right hash, 41, and just move that ball around until somebody lost, which was usually me. But as I've been telling people, it's got a lot less to do with strength and technique. And I hadn't done that in probably 15 years. And when I grabbed the ball and inflated it and did that and just needed a few takes, I was thrilled, because those reminders – or those things are real reminders to me that I am every bit as strong as I am today as I was a year ago, with the exception of my right hand and arm, which were no good when I started this trial.
Tim, just one more time, the quote, "I hadn't done that in 15 years.
Yeah.
No. I'm going to write that down.
Well, it's just kicking a ball.
It's a bit more detailed than that.
Mr. Snow. Right.
Are you surprised at how far the trick shot for Snowy has traveled?
Yes and no. I think we're seeing the power of social media. I never had much of a following on Twitter, but to post that video and see that nearly 400,000 people have watched it tells me that we have the real capacity to reach some people. And I personally am hopeful that this is just the beginning of this trick shot. I've reached out personally to a number of NHL teams, be it the GM, if I know him, the assistant GM, if there's a coach who I worked with along the way before. The idea being that I'd like to see this go through all 30 other teams. I'd like to see this cut across as much of the other professional sports as we can and into other industries. And I think that hopefully that snowball is still small right now. But to your point, we are, let's see, about 20 days in or less, I guess about 19 days in, and we're at $41,000 raised. which gets our total that we've raised since my diagnosis to about $182,000, all toward research. And we've got about 300 outstanding challenges that we're waiting to see people respond to.
Better than anything.
I think we can help with that. Yeah. I think we can help with that, though. We can challenge some folks.
Now, do you need them?
Tricks up your sleeve.
I don't have any that are good. See, that's my issue, Chris. See, the problem is the bar.
There's a threshold there.
I'm seeing a threshold, because what I'm seeing are people on jet skis catching balls. What I'm seeing are people kicking field goals 45 yards or longer. This is an amazing cause, but I am very self-conscious, and I want to be able, if I'm going to contribute, Chris, I want to be able to not embarrass myself, which is very difficult for me to do.
Sid, you can just pressure other people into doing it. That's one way to do it.
He knows me too well, Chris. I can do that very well.
It doesn't have to be athletic. It just requires creativity. I know you both have that.
You know what? All right. You got my juices flowing here. I got a couple ideas. I'll do that for you. Chris Snow is the assistant GM of the Calgary Flames. He is an absolute delight, and we are delighted to have him here on Tim and Sid. Chris, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to assume a lot of people privately and publicly have reached out in any number of ways. Who's the person that reached out that kind of surprised you, that took you aback, that you weren't expecting?
It might be this, I don't want to call it a relationship, that I seem to be starting to develop with Steve Gleason. And Steve Gleason was a New Orleans Saint, a famous one, blocked a famous punt after Hurricane Katrina in the first game back. And he was diagnosed 9 years ago with the disease. And Steve's foundation has raised in excess of $10 million. And he doesn't have any physical capabilities whatsoever, lives his life on a ventilator, in a wheelchair, has a really neat technology that allows him to look at letters, and his voice was recorded, and the technology will speak the words that he types with his eyes in his voice. And he and Theo Steen, the Cubs president of baseball ops, are very good friends, due to Steve being a Cubs fan and Theo being someone who just tends to find his way to people in other walks of life who he thinks would be great relationships to develop. And so Theo connected me to Steve, who the other day texted me, and I felt bad. I asked how long the text had taken to write. And he said about 15 minutes a word, but then he said, text anytime and use this other app, and I'm much, much quicker on that. So the world starts to be very small and very supportive at moments like that. And that just that gives me more energy and more motivation.
Yeah, his story is unbelievable, and his fight has been, I almost swore, has been inspiring. Yeah. It has been very inspiring. You know, we're in this spot, Chris, and I know you know it, like a global pandemic. We're going through something that we've never gone through before. And I've said to Sid that I've been rattled a couple times, and I do try my darndest to have gratitude every day. But I also understand that I get caught up, the blinders go on, and bam, there's a woe is me day. And then I read stories about guys like Steve Gleason or yourself, or watch stories. What would you say to someone like me who gets caught up in the day-to-day? Because I believe maybe your perspective, especially in these moments right now, might do people some good. I read about your gratitude and how you work for that gratitude. Like, what would you say to someone like me who's sitting here, and right now I'm relatively healthy and getting caught up sometimes in that day-to-day?
We all do. There are still moments where, you know, I get upset at my son or my daughter, more my son because he's older, and then I think after, why did I do that? But what I would say is it's very easy for me to appreciate a sunny day, fresh air, being able to move, and to stop in those moments and realize that none of that was guaranteed to me. And it's easy to not think about tomorrow, in part because tomorrow could bring a change, and a change could indicate a bigger change that might be coming. And so it's a combination of it brings fear to look down the road, but it also allows me to feel gratitude to be in the moment, in today. So I just, whenever I have something that I enjoy, whether it's, you know, smelling fresh cut grass, whether it's taking a bike ride with the kids, I never pass up one of those because I wasn't supposed to have any of these. And ultimately, you know, every day forward, we're all going to be one day older, one day less physically capable, whether we're sick or not. And why look past today? You know, whenever I get in a bad spot, my wife even says, hey, none of us are guaranteed tomorrow for any reason. So today is kind of what we focus on in my household. And I break today into parts, you know, the morning, and there's still the afternoon and night to come. And I try to enjoy each little segment because there's something to it to enjoy. And this time of year, it's very, very easy. I think in the winter, I was concerned about that last year. I managed to find that in coaching my son's hockey team in the Flames. And so I just identify those things that I enjoy, and I really try to pour my energy into making sure that I appreciate those.
I'm terrible at smelling the roses. Just honestly, I'm just talking out loud here, Chris, at this point. I'm terrible. Like hearing everything you said, this entire interview, your story, I'm awful at smelling the roses, and I got to get better at that.
It's not easy. Like a lot of us, myself included, you have to be forced to do it. So to find that without being forced, that really takes some effort. That's just human nature.
Yeah,
you're right. You're right. Before we let you go, they do absolutely, Timmy. They definitely help. Chris, before we let you go, we mentioned it a couple times during the show. June is ALS Awareness Month. We can't let you go, Chris, without letting people at home listening or watching let them know how they can help if they want to. How can people help, Chris?
Sure. So we have a website, and it's calgaryflames.com/snowystrong. On there, you can find our story, a link to my wife's unbelievable blog that has detailed the last year of our lives and will continue to, as well as videos from several NHL players to us. And if you went on Twitter or elsewhere, you could find under the hashtag trickshot4, the number 4, Snowy, S-N-O-W-Y, all of the trick shots done to date. We'd love to see anybody, even if you've not been challenged to do that, post that challenge to people that you know and make even the smallest donation. We think we can help cure this disease through a lot of small donations, and I think that that's the best way to ask. If you ask for something big, that's hard, but a lot of little ones, we can get there.
Keep kicking ass and taking names. We appreciate you coming on with us, and I want to do this again another year down the road, okay?
Same here, and you have 3 days now. You've been challenged.
All right.
I apologize for the bad video that's about to come your way. I apologize every time.
I may or may not have some outtakes already, Chris, but I'll post them all with the rest of it, okay?
Let's just go with those. Awesome.
All right.
Take care,
thanks,
Chris,
for this. We appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good day.
You
there
too.
There is Chris Snow, assistant GM. Also, his wife is writing a blog about this all. And you can follow her at Kelsey S. Writes. Again, at Kelsey, K-E-L-S-I-E-S, Writes, W-R-I-T-E-S. And she chronicles what they're going through, and a lot of the inspiration comes from her writing, as well as what he's doing on the day-to-day.
That was great. It was great to talk to Chris.
Yeah,
and if you can help, like Chris said, with smaller donations, they believe they can get there with a little bit from everybody. So please help. And we thank Chris again for joining us. All right, Timmy, let's shift gears here. I like the question you asked early in the show. Should the Bills be nervous about Cam Newton in their division? I'm not convinced. What's a good question? Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots for ESPN, will join us next. Cam Newton's a Patriot. What now? On TV, radio, online, and 24/7 on pod. This is Tim and Sid. I'm Sid Sixero. Tim McAuliffe will be back momentarily. Still to come, the good news of the day, where Tim rolls us through some good news of the day because we need it, damn it. And again, a big thank you to Chris Snow, Assistant General Manager of the Calgary Flames, who was diagnosed with ALS last June. Just a tremendous, tremendous individual. And he is phenomenal. And again, if you can help out in any way, this being ALS Awareness Month, please do it. And it'll definitely be worth your while to help out because it's an incredible cause. Cam Newton had been out of a job since March. Cam Newton played only 2 games last season due to a foot injury. Now, injuries with Cam Newton are nothing new. He's torn a rotator cuff. He's had a back injury. He's had a knee injury. This is a guy who has been in the wars. This is a guy who has put his body on the line because Cam Newton does that. That's how he plays his entire career. Last year, kind of caught up with him, playing only two games for the Carolina Panthers. They released him in March. He had not signed since. He had not gotten much of a sniff with any team since. And everyone was kind of wondering, what is going to happen with Cam Newton? How long is this going to go? And last night was the moment we found out, Timmy, that Cam Newton, at a little over $7 million, if he hits all his bonuses, is now a member of the New England Patriots. So that was the news last night. And yeah, the Patriots got fined and all that. But hey, sweep that under the rug because Cam Newton is a Patriot. Mike Reese of ESPN is joining us. He covers the Patriots for ESPN. Mike, it was very Patriots to drop that in the middle of a summer on a Sunday night, wasn't it?
Oh, Tim, Sid, I you know, in terms of dropping it, I'm not sure how much that was them, as news, as we know in this business, can come at any hour, any time, and usually when you're a Patriots beat reporter, right about when you're going to go on vacation. That's what I've learned over the years.
Were you actually heading out on vacation?
I mean, we're not heading out technically, but it was supposed to be day one of vacation. But as it turned out here in suburban Boston, the weather hasn't been too great. So we just sort of bank a couple days and push it out a little more.
So I got to ask, how long do you think it'll take for him to become the starter, or is he already sharpied in as the starter?
I wouldn't say sharpied in. I think it's fair to say that he would be the odds-on favorite just based on his resume. I mean, and the big game experience. I mean, this is an NFL Most Valuable Player, led his team to Super Bowl 50. So just based on that, I put him at the top of the list. But the Patriots don't generally do that. They're gonna have a competition, and if Jarrett Stidham, last year's fourth round pick, who I'm told they're high on and their view on him hasn't changed, if he competes and wins the job, they'll be thrilled, because that'll tell them, you know, decisively what they hope, which is that he's the long term answer here.
Mike Reese of ESPN here on Tim and Sid. Cam Newton has signed a 1-year deal with the Patriots, and the NFL world is going crazy. What does he physically have left? Like, when he's healthy, he's talented. He threw a 68% completion percentage 2 years ago. So he's not that far removed from when he's on the field. He looks like he has that in him. But the issue is getting on the field. Mike, what are you hearing? I mean, have the Patriots even been able to give him a physical? Has that taken place?
You know, I think here's how I understand it. First, I mean, to me, the answer is that it's TBD. It's to be determined, and I think that's part of what's so compelling about this, is if he's healthy. Like, that's a huge if, and if the foot responds well. So specific to the physical, Adam Schefter and Chris Mortensen, colleagues at ESPN, reported that the Panthers had arranged a physical with a doctor, and that it was coordinated. And according to them, you know, Cam, his foot checked out well, and in addition to that, you know, they said he's as motivated as ever. So that's what we have to go on right now. But as we know, like, the true test is once you get out and put the pads on and there's contact, how does everything respond? And truly, it's an unknown, and that's part of what we got to follow and see, because that's going to paint in this picture as to how this situation unfolds, is if he becomes the guy or if it, you know what, this one didn't work out. And for the Patriots, it's really low risk. There's not a big financial penalty to just walk away if it doesn't work out.
The interesting part of this is how the Pats are up against the salary cap and how they've had this history of rolling the dice with veterans. Is that history in play here, that they know that they can give a guy like this a shot? And if it works out, it could work out really, really well for this team. And if it doesn't, ho-hum, we move on the way we've moved on a bunch of different times in the past.
I think that's really well said, and I, you know, the economic component is critical here, because that's really the one thing that's changed, you know, from May, when Bill Belichick was on record saying, look, we could bring in another quarterback, but right now, you know, we like the four guys we're working with. Well, what changed from then to now? Well, it's that Cam's willingness to take this modest deal. I mean, this is like, I was making the analogy of like, yeah, we'd all love a beach house right on the ocean, but, you know, those are tough to touch money-wise, but all of a sudden, if someone comes to you and says, I'm going to cut this price, you know, by a third, all of a sudden that dream might become closer to a reality for some people. So I think that part is what helps them in this area, the team, in that the risk is minimal financially. And then the Randy Mosses in 2007, the Darrell Revises in 2014, those worked out. Chad Ochocinco didn't work out. So you hit some, you miss others. But certainly that history and doing this type of thing is part of this Patriots program over the last two decades.
Mike Reese of ESPN joining us here on Tim and Sid. Cam Newton signing last night a one-year deal with the Patriots. Mike, I, as I mentioned a couple times, Newton's been on the market since March. And the NFL's a funny place. How many teams last night do you think picked up their phones and said, I'd have done that for a year at 7 mil? Or maybe we should have done that for a year at 7 mil? Like how much backtracking do you think around the league went on last night?
That's a great question. And you know, I would think maybe not that much because they're, I mean, now, you know, now that I think it through, sometimes the Patriots have some cachet where when they make a move, right, it's like, oh, why didn't we think of that? But, you know, what is the handful of teams, you know, when you think about it? You know, Jaguars, Bears are committed. You know, it's one of those positions where there's not that many seats at the table, which is actually sort of how Cam ended up in New England, right? Like, his options were limited. The Chargers, maybe. So I think, I know I'm wishy-washy here, I'm going back and forth, but I do think there's a little bit of, you know, maybe the Patriots get the benefit of the doubt here because, you know, they're getting the bargain, but I have to believe that if a team's just doing its job, its due diligence, it would know that that was an option to them at that price.
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney is in a similar situation where you wonder, you know, how healthy is he and what can he do? The one question that I have that it's kind of a short-term and long-term question is, we don't know when and if a season is going to be played. We know it's going to be a short runway, and the Patriots haven't exactly run an offense that Cam Newton has run before. It is because he's a former MVP and because it's Josh McDaniels, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots, are the expectations maybe a little too high for what he can do and how quickly he might be able to do it in New England?
You know, I think for those who say, you know, they're going to get the Cam of a couple years ago or the MVP Cam, I would say that's too high. I mean, based on what? You know, and Bill Belichick always says, you got to start over every year and prove it all over again. And coming off, you know, injuries are a factor. And now he's only 31. I think that part probably helps. I mean, that's an age that quarterbacks, I would say, is not, you're not thinking end of career at that point, although he has taken some hits, right? So here's the way I look at it. The expectations would be like, put him out there, compete, and he has the best resume, the best talent of anyone you know, that they have at quarterback. He has the least experience in the system. So they have a good history of tailoring their plan, you know, to specific players. Think of quarterbacks when Tom wasn't there, Matt Castle in 2008. You know, they did some different things by moving him out of the pocket. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett in 2016. Yeah. Remember Jacoby Brissett running for a touchdown? Like, they would never call that play, you know, with Tom Brady. So I think that history, that flexibility will help.
But, Mike, considering all the injury concerns that we've kind of talked about here, at 31, does Cam now have to change a little in how he plays? Is there a bit of a shift here career-wise? You know what? Maybe if you stand there a bit more like Tom and act slow, you'll get clobbered less. Like, is there some of that going on, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know if you can change, you know? I was covering a game down there. I think it was a preseason game a couple years ago. A preseason game. And he's, like, running and, like, flipping and twirling in the air. And I remember going into their locker room being like, what was that? And they go, oh, that's just Cam. You know, that's the way he plays the game. And so I think, and also when you talk about standing there, like part of what made Tom effective or makes him effective doing that is he's very accurate. You know, he has a great touch. Like, when you think about Cam, like, those aren't the first two things that come to mind, you know, with his game. So I think, I don't know, maybe change or maybe just be smart. You know, like Tom Brady always said, like, sometimes you got to live to get to the next play because the team is counting on you to be there and you don't want to, you know, put your team at risk by putting yourself at risk. So maybe there's an element to that, but I think changing the way you play, like that's a tough one.
Mike Reese, ESPN, joining us here on Tim and Sid. The Patriots were also penalized for taping the Bengals sidelines. It was a $1.1 million hit and a third-round pick from this team that has been penalized before. We all remember Spygate. We all remember Deflategate. One, was the punishment fair? And two, what do you think it tells us about what the NFL found?
So, well, let's start with the first one. I mean, I view it as a very significant punishment just based on what happened. You know, so this is basically like a TV production crew for the Patriots. So it's separate from their football operation. So these aren't the people that film the games and give the coaches, you know, the full view of the field so they can study it and prepare their team. This is like a social media team, you know, a television team. So I think that's sort of the important context to start with. They're out filming a feature on a scout, an advanced scout, to show the viewers on their TV show what the advanced scout does. And they make a mistake, admitting to this mistake of, like, you can film them in the press box, and they had permission to do that, but then they turn the camera to the field and sideline because they want to show the viewers, you know, what's the scout looking for. And that was the no-no. And so based on that, and they admitted the mistake, like, to get fined $1.1 million, get a third-round draft pick taken away, and have a couple other penalties included, to me that's very significant and is heavy-handed, and certainly the team's history, to me, probably is the reason for that penalty more than this particular action in this particular case.
Mike, before we let you go, Sean McDermott and the Bills are watching this happen. Sean McDermott, as a former D.C. in Carolina, is not unfamiliar with one Cam Newton. Does this change much in terms of the previews going into the season in the AFC East? Are the Bills a little concerned with what happened here?
I would think they have to be confident. I mean, I still feel like any transition from Tom Brady, and this is with all due respect to Cam Newton, Jarrett Stidham, Brian Hoyer, like, you're still transitioning from Tom Brady, who, you know, for my money is one of the best leaders, you know, and teammates in the history of the game, just from what I've seen over 20 years. So I feel like what has helped the Bills be successful, from my view, is sticking to their plan, building their program with their type of players, and I feel like they have a good leadership team out there. So I think the idea of staying the course and not getting off track based on anything the Patriots are doing, that'll serve them well, and I believe that that's what they'll do because that's sort of consistent with who I view Sean McDermott to be.
Mike, we appreciate the time. I know it's been a busy one for you, and whenever you get the time to get out on vacation, enjoy the time and whatever vacation means in this day and age.
I appreciate it, Tim. Thanks, Sid. Good luck with the show, and hope all the listeners are doing well as well.
Take care, Mike. Appreciate it. Mike Reese, ESPN. He's good at his job, and we appreciate him coming on. Yeah, Tim, is everything all right? Because it just you were not in your seat to start the segment, and every time I see that, I think horrible thoughts because you know me. I'm that's who I am. I do panic easy. So is everything okay in the McAuliffe household?
Everything is okay in the McAuliffe household, and I'll tell you exactly what transpired when we return with the good news of the day.
Jeez, this is good.
And whatever the hell kept me from being here for the start of the segment with Mike Reese, which I apologize for. I'll tell you why next, right here on Tim and Sid. I'm here this time.
Hey!
All right. So to start the show, I tell Sixtero the story. Actually, I told you before the show. I'm mixing it up.
You told me the story about putting together the barbecue with your dad over the weekend, and I had told you off air my weekend included removing two 40-year-old bushes from the front of my house.
Bush party.
Bush party. Bush party tonight. Bush party. Bush party tonight.
And that bush party sucked. It sucked royally. It was the worst bush party ever because these were 40-year-old bushes that had grown basically into trees. But because they're bushes, there are several stumps to every one of these bushes.
Give me a width. Give me a width. What are you talking about? Like, what are you?
I can't.
You can't?
I can't.
That wide. Oh, okay.
One.
All right.
One was this wide. And then... there were three more. So a total of four bushes. 6-0.
That's an intense bush party.
I was bushwhacking. So I start on this job in my front yard, and as you know, I'm pretty close old school with my neighbors for a while. And
your neighbor's Greek? Is that what you told me?
I have several Greek neighbors. And I've got basically, I for those who don't know, I live in the house that I grew up in. So these people have known me basically my whole life, and they've all stayed. So I begin work on these bushes, and I have a little chainsaw, and I'm going to work. And my 76-year-old neighbor comes across the street, having done this as a child in Greece, and starts taking my manhood in one hand and helping me in the other hand.
This was over the weekend.
Over the weekend. It was emasculating, and it was amazing because I got help from someone who knew what the bleep they were doing, as opposed to me as I'm shaving off all of the branches. This dude, 76, again, wham, axe. Wham, saw. Wham, axe.
Let me understand. So you're having trouble.
And what I was just going to take a long time.
You're going to take a long time. But the guy across the street who's like the berserker comes over and goes, Huss, 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 and just takes down all of them, right?
Correct. Right. And I think you've met his sons, too, back in the day. But anyways, I'm working away. He helps me. We end up getting it done way quicker. We're both, like, profusely sweating because it was ridiculous.
You need the help, and he gave you legit help. This was a good thing that happened.
So I've got big stumps left, 6-0. Huge stumps. You know what I'm talking about. Like, just very thick stumps that are left.
Yep.
And I can't take the axe to them, so I'm going to get a stump remover to come over. As we go to break after talking to Chris Snow, I hear nobody's home. Family's out visiting relatives.
You are the only one in the house right now. I'm the only one in the house.
Okay. Only one in the house. And I start hearing banging upstairs because I'm in the basement. I go out there. My neighbor is now taking care of the stumps. And I got to come. I have
wait
to tell
second, him. Wait a second. Hold on. He has his own machine?
Industrial.
What does he have?
He's got a chainsaw, a sledgehammer, and an axe.
Oh, my God.
And he's going at it himself. And I'm like, stop.
He's an Avenger. Like, he's just taking care of... Tim, let's book this guy tomorrow at 5:20. I want to talk to this guy. Let's get him on the show, man. I want to know what's going on. This is... So, hold on. So, you just ran out and
Spiros
said, stop.
Xenophon, can you tell dad to stop, please?
Has he stopped? Is he still going as we speak?
He stopped. And I had to get his wife to come over and stop him.
Okay, he's uncontrollable.
Good neighbors are hard to find. That right there is the...
Wow.
...of neighbors. If that button was a neighbor, that would be the button the neighbor is.
You know what, Tim? I'm gonna peel it back a little bit. I think to do unlawful stumping is a little off. I think he needed your permission to stump, to stump the yard, so to speak. And I do believe he just can't show up and start, like, you're on a national television and drive time radio show here. Like, there are certain things going on that he wasn't aware of. God bless his soul. So I do believe the stumping aspect of that was a little a little past, a little out of bounds. Not totally out of bounds, just slightly. But I think the whole story is just an epitome of kindness. And shout out your neighbors.
Anyone who has grown up with a Greek neighbor or with Greeks in and around, now you know why the Yayas are so tough. Oh, my goodness.
Tim, don't mess around. Are we going to get this guy on the show and he just rips you for not offering a beer? Like, is that what's going to happen?
No, I've actually... I don't want to say it because his sons do watch, but I've already planned getting something. I got a text from in our group text with the team from George Skoutakis, who may or may not be Greek.
Who's from Latvia? Latvia.
Azo 620, book the Greek berserker.
Listen, with all due respect, I don't know if there's going to be Hub Cities announced tomorrow. I don't know if the Jays are going to announce tomorrow. This segment shall not be moved. I want to talk to your neighbor about what exactly happened. I want insight. Maybe you're not giving me all the details, McAuliffe. What else took place here? Did he want to leave at some point? Is McAuliffe like, I really need to finish these other bushes. Can you help me out? Like, what really happened here? This is the interview I'd like to conduct.
Are you with me, though, where he's got my manhood in the palm of his hand right now? Or are you just happy that someone did the work?
No. It's both because what the old school guys like doing is they cloak themselves in, you need help? I'm going to help you. I'm going to come over. I got an axe. I got a bushwhacker. We're going to do all kinds of things. And then they help you. But then halfway through, they realize you're Rosie Ruiz in the marathon. You got to take a cab and you're done. And they're about to finish.
They're like
Randy Couture at 45, just dusting people, and they're making a point with you. So they're helping you on the one hand, but they are spitting in your face in general manhood in the other. And I think the two are not mutually exclusive. I think you can have one without the other. I think you can.
Is that my good news of the day?
The fact that we booked our 620 guest tomorrow to me is good news. I think we're set. So our show tomorrow is just, if you want more on this story tomorrow, we are going to talk to Christos, who was it across the street? Do we have a first name?
Yanni
Haristerius will be on the show tomorrow, and we'll talk. we'll wonder what happened with Tim's bush party over the weekend and how it is he just walks up to people's lawns and starts and stumps the yard. Is that allowed? Is that good etiquette? I don't know. Does he believe your yard is now his yard, Tim? I don't know. These are the questions that we need to figure out tomorrow.
We'll see. We'll see. I'll say the co-host wants you on the show. I don't think he's a regular viewer.
His sons watch
all the time. I'm surprised I haven't got a text from either one of the sons yet.
They're going to Rogers Ignite this whole segment for old man. You're going to show him tonight.
We've only got 90 seconds left, and normally this is the good news of the day. So can I just say... shout out to Dundas, Ontario's Mackenzie Hughes. I did the research on the two putts on 17 and 18. Did you see the two putts on 17 and 18?
40-foot bomb on 17 and a 40-foot bomb on 8. That's how you wrap up a tournament where you finish tied for third. Mackenzie Hughes was unbelievable.
Do you know what those two putts gave him?
Oh, money-wise? No.
Each putt worth $100,000. $200,000 was the difference. He took home $463.60.
Tim, I used to think watching a hole in one or two on Price is Right was pressure, and then Mackenzie Hughes steps up and drops 100 G putts to move himself up the leaderboard. My God! And we talked to him on the Thursday after he shot his 60. So it was a great show. So good on you, Mackenzie Hughes. Dustin Johnson won it in Connecticut, but nice payday, Tim. Thank you for that story. I appreciate it.
Good.
Talk to you tomorrow.
I'm Rosie Ruiz.
That one was just for you. I don't care if no one got it. He's Tim. I'm Sid. This is Tim and Sid on TV and radio. And Tim, as we leave you, never forget, kids, especially now.
I wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Washing your hands. Washing your hands. Washing your hands.